Hello, this is Norton Guskey. On July 30th and 31st of 2011, a group of over 100 people gathered together to celebrate being part of Bigelow Heights, a neighborhood located between Squirrel Hill and Greenfield. The group spent their time walking around the neighborhood, sharing stories, talking about their joys, their fears, and then spent another day where they had a chance to celebrate and join together to remember what it was like to grow up in this post-World War II development.
This is Barbara Lindenberg Rosenzweig again. I want to tell you something that I think is very funny. So if you don't think so, don't tell me. Bernie Sharap used to sing to my daughter Diane, who you all know is Diane Lindenberg Silverman. He used to sing, "There she is, Miss America." And she would always come in the house saying, "He's driving down the street singing Miss America to me again." I'm so embarrassed. One night we were watching the pageant from my bed, and Bert Park started singing, "There she is, Miss America." Diane sat bolt upright, and she said, "Why is he singing my song?" And I said, "Honey, it's not your song." And one day Bernie would drive down the street, and she would go to school, and he'd sing, "There she is, Miss America," as he was driving down the street. She'd come in and she'd say, I'm so embarrassed. The next day he went down and he was looking where he was driving for a change. And he didn't say anything to her because he was looking where he was driving. And she came back in the house and she said, "Mr. Sharap went down the street and he didn't even sing Miss America to me." And I said, "Live with it."
This is Bernie Sharap. I'm not bragging, but it's understood that everything I do, I sure do good. Now, I know a girl on top of the hill. She won't do it, but her sister will. Bye-bye.
It's David Middleman, and I grew up in Bigelow Heights with my sister, Ann, and my parents, Irv and Margie Middleman. I was born in 1956. We lived at 4272 Minnesota Street. And probably the most significant thing about that house was in 1970 when we, I guess, began the integration of Bigelow Heights in that we sold our house to Bill Fisher, who became the principal at Taylor Allrice. I grew up on Minnesota Street, right across from the Leader family, which, as I understand it, at one point owned much, if not all, of Bigelow Heights, and I can fondly remember the display they would put every year on their roof, which was at Christmas time, which was a sleigh with Santa Claus and reindeer. Right across from me, at the bottom of the street was our woods, which now, unfortunately, is gone, and an apartment complex was developed on that site, but my closest friends growing up were Lisa Sowski and Alex Komnenos, Jackie Morrison, and Barbie Cohen. Of course, I did go to the top of Glen Lytle and hung out with kids up there, Janet Bass and Stuart Hausman, and went down to Greer Street and hung out with the Myers clan, and it's nice to see even some of the older kids, as I guess we refer to them as, Louis Schwartz, Screwy Louis, as I can recall, is what we called him or what they called him. And this has been a fabulous get-together and opportunity to walk around yesterday. I'm so thankful that people had the foresight to do this, and it's really brought back an awful lot of memories.
All right, my name is Jackie Smallovitz. Lived at 4243 Glen Lytle Road many years ago with my mom, my dad, and my two brothers. Grew up there in the neighborhood, and oh, what a great neighborhood that was. The memories that you have of that, and my mind goes now at 60 years old, but I think back to days of riding our bicycles up and down that hill, flying up down Glen Lytle and around up in Greer Street, and playing handball at the bottom of Glen Lytle with the guys, and playing games like Release the Den or Tag and in the streets with everybody, and reminiscing with everybody this weekend has been wonderful and helping me to remember some of those things.
And one of the things, Jack, as soon as you saw me, this is Norton Guskey, that you started talking about All-Star Baseball. And for people that may not know about All-Star Baseball, it was basically a game with a spinner, and that there were cards associated with players. And I ended up inheriting a collection from Holly Brookner that began in the 1950s. And I had all the great players going back to almost the beginning of the game, all the way up through the early 1960s. So there was like 40 years of players. And I had them in according to teams that they played for. And I actually had people like you who would then play games for me and keep statistics.
I remember dividing the players off into teams and having gum bands around the cards. And you'd have to pick who you wanted to be on at bat at the right time. And I remember keeping track of everything that happened, just like you were at a Pirate baseball game. And then we would have lists made up of who was in first place, who was in second place, and how the leagues all came together and worked. And it was a lot of fun.
This is Ron Escarado remembering how much I loved growing up in Bigelow Heights. And I know if I had to do it all over, I wouldn't pick any place else. I love everybody that's coming. And I loved the bonds that we formed and that we feel the same way when we're together now. And I want to thank Nordy, my pilot, and Abby, the co-pilot, for making this happen. And I'm glad they were able to tolerate me on the team. Well, Loretta Road was wonderful. I always remember playing Red Rover, Red Rover. And I was one of the most uncoordinated people on the street. So I always was last to be picked on the team. But it didn't matter because I still had some bulk, so I could hold my weight in the line. And I remember Debbie Monsine, we kidnapped Kenny Simon, and then we played doctor. I don't want to go into too much detail on that. And I remember, oh my Lord, I remember when Carol Galata invited me over for dinner. And I thought that they ate the same way the Scarados ate, and I got one lamb chop and a square of Jell-O. And I was so hungry after, I ran home and ate. So, you know, it sort of gave me a perspective on the world. But what else do I remember about Loretta Road? Oh, Lord, I loved Bernice Simon, and I loved Esther Black, and I loved, of course, Gloria and Mel Monsine, and the Gibsons and the Garcias. And even in before, as I go to sleep sometimes, I remember everybody on the block. And I love dear Herbie Mallett, even if he didn't want to come. And Nancy Fogel and Earl Sigel. And the fact that I never had to look for a playmate, all I had to do was step out of my house every day.
The one thing that I always remember about you and my mother is Mahjong group.
Oh, yeah.
You were part of the original group with my mother and Rose Ackerman and Sylvia Brookner.
And Serena Feinberg. Yeah.
And how many years did that go on?
Oh, that went on for a long time. It really did, yeah. Went on, I think, well, then Serena moved and Sylvia moved. And
but then Nikki Smolovitz joined. And
then we had other ones that joined. Phyllis Schwartz. Yeah, then they did, yeah, yeah.
But that group kept playing for like 35 years.
Oh, we played for a long time.
Nordy, you were just saying how special it was you had a reunion with Marlene and Abby and how the group, how we got started. And it, you know, that you were talking to each other at a high school reunion, but you really felt this bond, this kinship of why you wanted to hang with each other. It was almost like I'm sure you were searching for something. And one common thread that I believe, and it was a follow-up to what Terry said, it's a common thread of fear, F-E-A-R, my Pittsburgh accent, and also a little bit of a speech impediment that I still have. So the common thread you mentioned was fear, and the fear we had and what we experienced walking to Greenfield School. And, you know, it's not like we want to pick on, oh, it was the same result, but we, independent of how it happened or who did it, we experienced something that made us who we are today. And I think made us stronger. I think it's made us more aware.
One time I'll never forget coming home from grade school, crying, and asking my mom, how do they know I'm Jewish? I look like them. It's not like I'm black or, you know, different. How do they know I'm Jewish? Because I would walk by St. Rosalia, and you would get the Christ killer comments and kike comments, and I didn't even know what a kike was. Had to ask my mom that. She wouldn't tell me, but Marlene did.
You know, talk about safe. I remember the garbage men coming, and, you know, they'd go in the alleyway
between the houses
and dump your garbage in that sack, and I was very afraid of them. And I was going to choir practice at Greenfield School one morning very early. And I remember looking out the front window and I saw the garbage truck pull up in front of our house and I had to leave because I had to be there for practice. And I panicked and I said, I went and got my mother and I said, I can't go to school. The garbage men, they're out there. And she said to me, they're not allowed to hurt you. And I believed her. And I walked out of the house and walked to school.
And they grabbed her. And she just was returned. Just returned this weekend.
They had enough. They were, but really, that you know, we did feel safe. We really did. And I remember pulling up to Greenfield, right at the corner there of McGee Field, and the Hunkies would be standing on that corner. And they would Dairy Queen and across the street, right at the steps, going down to the field. And when you would make that stop, I remember you had to make sure your doors were locked. I mean, that was scary. I also remember going to Walnut Street as a teenager when it was two ways. And it would take forever to go through. But that was a big thing. When you were little, maybe 14, you didn't drive yet. And somebody, an older teenager, took you, and I remember they said, make sure all the doors are locked and the windows are up. I mean, Shadyside was a scary place.
I was just at a conference, and we were doing an exercise for facilitating in groups and whether you were an intimate person or a strategic person. And I came out as one of the most strategic people, and everybody said, that's so weird. You're a therapist. You're a social worker. How are you so strategic? And when we were talking about it, I realized many, many episodes that Steve left me, forgot me, or was sick, and I had to walk home, and I didn't know anybody, so I traded my little rainbow tablet to Eric Citrin and Eddie, and they said I could only walk behind them, not with them, but I knew I couldn't walk alone. And then I remember very early on being accosted in gym by, I won't mention her name, and I kind of knew that I had to get in with the guys, and I was smart, and I offered to help them with their work. And it was very critical. It was like first or second grade. I would help them, and I traded that. And I always had my mind working in Greenfield. You had to, like, how are you going to get over there? How are you going to get through, you know, the turf from school? How are you going to get protected? And so how a young person at that age kind of knew and learned the social, I think we all became very strategic in our social skills, and then we also didn't have it safe on the other side. Then you had to cross through Squirrel Hill, and then you had the whole other side in Squirrel Hill. So I guess the pleasing, I've always, you know, a middle person, a facilitator, a mediator in between the peacemaker, middle child. So I really think we were stranding two worlds. We were, you know, we were in the middle of two worlds, and then that played out later in adolescence when I left Greenfield earlier. I left in seventh grade because I went to the scholars program. It was the first class. And then there were all these people. Or you took the bus to Shoal on the other side, and then you were weird to those people, and then you were weird. Yeah, so we did have to really pick up some social skills really fast and really did, you know, maybe, you know, it is pleasing. But I also think part of it was very healthy and strategic, and you kind of learn to survive. But it is an interesting, I think, of a theme is Judaism and being Jewish and being other.
As a group, when we think about, we always stay together, and there was the sense if you walked outside the neighborhood, you were at jeopardy. I mean, Diane talked about, for instance, that her brother Jay had been attacked, and I remember I was attacked, you were attacked. Many of us had incidents where if we were by ourselves, we were vulnerable, and people would, why? Because we were Jewish. And there was an anti-Semitic feeling in the world around us that we had to deal with. And even though the neighborhood wasn't all Jewish, it was a neighborhood of people who were Jewish and non-Jewish, but they were all supportive of kids in the neighborhood, and we knew that. And so as soon as we were in the neighborhood, we were safe.
And the last time that that happened to me was a strange feeling. I was in Poland. It was the first time in 30 or 40 years that I had that same feeling that I had walking back from Greenfield, going back to my home, is that having that sense of being vulnerable and knowing that I couldn't leave the group, because if I left the group, I was vulnerable to these people who were stalking us, who were looking at us because I was with a Jewish group and they were making anti-Semitic remarks. And I think it's one of the things about growing up that was something we didn't always talk about, but we felt it. But we knew we had each other. And so it was a way that, you know, when Joey mentioned that thread, to me it wasn't the fear, it was as much the sense of having that protection that was the common thread, that we had each other.